You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Dean Moyer from Sand Valley Farms in Richfield, Pennsylvania. Dean, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Dean, I heard something about the USDA coming down on you over some issue. I want to get into that in a second, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, give them a little bit of background about who you are and what is Sand Valley Farms.
Yes, my name is Dean Moyer from Sand Valley Farms. We're in central Pennsylvania, in the rural area of central Pennsylvania. We raise mice, rats, hamsters, and gerbils. The mice and rats we raise are basically for feeders, for snakes. We sell them to zoos. The hamsters and gerbils are pets that go to distributors that end up selling them to pet stores themselves. We've been doing this for 21 years with the mice and rats. We started back in 91. We've been doing the hamsters on a large scale for 12 years now, 12 years plus. Just to give people an idea of how many animals we do. In a week's time right now with mice, we do about 12,000 a week, rats about 1,500 a week, and hamsters, which is the issue I'm having right now at the USDA, we are producing about 1,000 a week. At my biggest, we were doing about 4,000 a week, but right now we're only doing about 1,000.
Is this known as a feeder farm?
Yes. Most of our animals do go for feeders, excluding the hamsters and the gerbils. They are strictly pets.
This is a family farm?
Yes. My wife and my two oldest are all involved. I have two younger ones. Well, in fact, the two younger ones from 8 and 12, they were both helping out today. My 17-year-old, since school's out, she's almost full-time, 32 hours a week. My wife's full-time, myself, and then we have about 7 or 8 other full-time employees.
How did you get involved in this type of business? Was it passed down or?
No, it was completely by chance. I used to work at a custom kitchen place about 15 minutes from me. It was a very good job. Back in 90, 91, the economy went south, so I got laid off from that job, was kind of looking around for work, got a part-time job working at a pet store, which was right up my alley. I loved that. Had a great time, ended up managing the pet store. I got into this because while ordering animals for the store, you couldn't get them at certain times of the year. It was impossible. And the demand was so high, I would order 50 mice and get 5. So I thought, well, you know, I was kind of jobless at the time, so I figured, well, maybe I'll start doing mice and rats and hamsters, and 21 years later, here I am.
That's amazing. It's amazing how people create something out of nothing, which is exactly...
Yes. Getting laid off from that job was the best thing that ever happened to me.
That's great. And obviously, you're supporting yourself, your wife, and 4 kids, right?
Yes, correct.
21 years ago, and you're a local Pennsylvanian?
Yes.
21 years ago, everything's going fine. When did old Uncle Sam come into the picture?
We used to raise hamsters back in the 90s. I did it very small scale, maybe 100 a week. So I was licensed. And the reason why I did that, I got my USDA license back then, was because one of the zoos, Philadelphia Zoo, that I wanted to sell feeder animals to required me to be USDA licensed. Of course, USDA doesn't license mice and rats, only hamsters. I was a little confused by that.
Right.
But we got the hamsters in and got inspected and got licensed. We did that for a little while, then we left that go. But back in the year 2000, we ended up buying a business that was established probably 50 years in Lancaster. And they were producing at that time about 2,000 hamsters a week, and they did mice and stuff also. We purchased that and ended up getting our license again and have had our license ever since the year 2000. And we've been inspected usually once or twice a year. Even when I owned that facility in Lancaster, we functioned that down there for about 2 years. Ended up moving it up here locally, so it was a lot more convenient, and have been running it up here ever since. And so the way it goes is when we would get inspected, it was a given that when they came, they were writing you up. They would find something to write you up for. It could be fecal matter on the floor, shavings on the floor, a dead animal in the box. I mean, just really unimportant stuff. And that had been the way it had gone for 12 years. I never had really any issues. You get all the write-ups, they would come in, sit down in the office, talk to you about it, you'd sign a paper, and they'd be off, and 6 months, 12 months later, they'd be back. Well, about 2 years ago, back in September 2010, my regular inspector was in Afghanistan, so they sent me a substitute. And this woman was, I mean, just way, way out there in left field. I swear she must have been a PETA member. I don't know. But she was looking for anything and everything. I mean, like a white glove test in an animal building. It was crazy.
Wow.
She used real harsh language with me and just attitude. The first time she was there, she threatened my employee, made my employee feel like she was going to lose her job, which upset me. So we did our closing interview with that individual. I was upset about that. I called. I spoke to her boss down in North Carolina, one of the heads in the USDA APHIS division, and spoke to her and told told her that I never wanted that agent to come here again without me being present when she went to my building, which I thought was fair. Both the agent I spoke to and her boss in North Carolina both understood it, both agreed to it. Well, that same agent came back on the next inspection, and what did he do? Walked right into my building without me again. So I made issue of it. I was upset. I wrote letters to the USDA. They didn't like that very much, so I ended up getting criminally investigated. I had a man from the USDA that was part of their enforcement services that was here with a gun on his hip with two inspector agents sitting in my office, and they were going to start doing criminal investigations on me because I raised hamsters.
What?
It was insane. Okay. Insane. I'm telling you, my wife and I were sitting here, and it's like, this is crazy. What are you people doing? The guy with the gun was here one time, never heard from him again, never saw him again. He was a very nice man, never had any issues with him. So after a while, my inspector came back. He was back from Afghanistan, came back here. Never heard anything after that until the week of July 15th. I get a real thick envelope, registered letter from the USDA. I'm thinking, oh no, now what? Opened it up and proceeded to read it and about fell off of my chair. The one line reads this. It says, pay the amount, $22,143 by August 29th, 2012. And they made it sound so easy because for my convenience, they said I could pay with credit card, check, money order, or if I couldn't afford to pay the $22,000, they could do payment terms stretched out to 2 years, $1,000 a month. I don't know anybody that can afford to do that. Certainly not me.
Not the good people.
No, no. So the woman that takes care of all this, her name is Sarah Conant, which happens to work for the Humane Society before the USDA hired her, and she loves to litigate for animal rights. And I spoke to her on Friday, basically pleading mercy. First of all, if I wanted to pay the $22,000, that was a lessened amount. They went back 3 years, brought all the write-ups, which was 45 of them in 3 years, many of them the same silly little issues, and told me if I wanted to go to court, which I can, they could come back, and it says that they could impose civil penalties of up to $10,000 per violation, which is $450,000 that I'm facing if I want to go to court.
That's where it sits right now.
Yes. Sarah Conant, when I spoke to her last Friday, pleading mercy, I told her, you know, I got four kids. There's just absolutely no way I can afford to pay $22,000. In order to make payments, I have to prove that I have financial hardship, so I have to send in my tax returns. It's crazy. And I said, I just can't afford it. And she was like, well, I'll talk to some of the people here at the USDA, but don't hold your breath, and I'll call you next week. So last week, they called and said there's nothing they could do. So I can do one of three things. I can pay the $22,000, whether it's cash or if they want to spread it out into 2 years, and waive my right to a hearing so I don't have to face a potential $450,000 fine. Or I can simply close up the business, two full-time employees and a part-time employee out of work, and they will abolish the fine.
You mentioned something called APHIS. And I
yes.
want, for the benefit of the listeners, that's a division of the USDA, which stands for Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service.
That's correct.
So you have two full-time employees and one part-time, is that what you said?
Yes, that take care of my hamsters, yes. Now, in my total business, including my mice and rats, I have full-time drivers, I got nine total full-time employees. So if I were to face a $450,000 fine, it would bankrupt my whole entire business.
When they would notice discrepancies, would they
yes.
fine you?
No, never.
Have you
never.
Ever been fined by them before?
Never.
And you've always cooperated with them?
Yes. With the regulations that they have, if you were raising 50 hamsters a week or 25 hamsters a week, you could very easily follow every regulation that they have. It would still be a little bit of work, but you could do it. But when you do it on a commercial level that we do it, it's impossible not to have fecal matter on the floor. It's impossible for them to go through and not find a sick animal or a dead animal in a box. It's literally impossible. In my hamster facility at any given moment, we have probably 6,000 animals in there. I got a surprise inspection actually this past week, last Thursday. I knew they were coming. We spent 12 hours before they got there. There's four of us, 3 hours each, went through every single box, make sure everything was okay, and pulled dead. We don't have a high mortality. We pulled all the dead out, and then they came in, 7 a.m., two inspectors, drove all the way here from Youngstown, Ohio, 4.5 hours one way. Went through every box, and they probably found 25 dead animals in my boxes. They are rodents. They don't live long anyway. They only have a couple year lifespan. They're nasty. They kill each other. Things happen.
Right.
They're not mistreated. They're not inhumanely treated by any stretch of anybody's imagination. They're very well taken care of. But because of the regulations, if the government turned their attention to anybody that does it like we do it commercially, they will shut them down. It is a $10,000 fine for any violation that you get that is a repeated violation. Maybe I got 3,000 boxes in my building. If they go through and find one dead animal on this inspection, they come back in 6 months and go through and find one dead animal again, that's $10,000 they can fine me. It is absolutely crazy.
But there's going to be dead animals. You can't avoid it.
Absolutely. And this was the thing with my inspector. He had a sense of reasonableness with him. Of course you're going to find dead. And I don't know if you know much about the chicken business.
I don't.
It's the same way. We're getting those right fresh from the farm. They go through a chicken house, usually twice a day, and I've done this myself, and pull dead out. If the USDA licensed chicken growers, they would be out of business because you find dead laying in there every single day. It's very low mortality, but you still find them in there. And what's really bad is, like, let's say you miss it one day, you go back the next day and you find one that's been there a day or two. You don't want to pull that chicken out because it's nasty. It's right. Disgusting. And we eat them. We eat them. They live on their excrement for up to 10 weeks. If the USDA APHIS division comes by and looks at one of my hamster boxes and thinks there's too much fecal matter in there, and this is the second time, that's $10,000 they can fine me. So if they want you out of business, they will put you out of business. And it is crazy. I've been raising small animals for 21 years. I know how to do it. We do it the best possible way we can do it because if I keep the animal healthy, it produces better. So economically, it's advantageous to me to make sure they're fed, watered, and cleaned.
I mean, it makes sense.
Right.
You mentioned before that the inspector was in Afghanistan. Is that right?
Yeah, he is actually a vet in the military. So okay. He was called to duty in Afghanistan. I know there was a big avian flu, I think, several years ago, too. And they flew him out to California, and he was in California working out there for quite a while also. Oh,
okay. So this guy shows up with the weapon holster.
Yes.
You obviously saw the weapon.
Yes.
Did it scare
you? Didn't like it. Didn't like it at all.
Why would they show up with a weapon?
Because I was going to be criminally investigated, and that was their enforcement officer. Come and look at my hamster.
What was the date that they showed up with the weapon?
You know what? I tried to find that. It was somewhere at the end of 2010. I couldn't find exactly when he was here. It was somewhere around October, November 2010, or it might even been in the very beginning of 2011.
What was the outcome of that criminal investigation?
We never got charged with anything. Everything went about the same as always. You know, the regulations that are written to benefit the Animal Welfare Act. And the Animal Welfare Act basically states that all animals are supposed to be tended to and basically humanely treated. That's fine. That's dandy. In fact, it's wonderful. But they come up with all these different variations that we're supposed to follow to try and make sure it's in somebody's opinion that my animals are humanely treated. For example, a cobweb that would be up in the corner of my building, that's a write-up. The new fluorescent lights, the curlicue ones now,
sure.
They don't make covers for them. I got written up because they could blow up and hurt the animals. It's just craziness. Just craziness. In 21 years, I never had an animal killed from a light bulb blowing up and hurting one of my animals. It's just nuts.
Leave it up to the government to point something like that out.
Yeah, it's creative, isn't it?
Yeah, they're good. The Animal Welfare Act you mentioned, that was passed, I'm looking here, in 1966.
Okay.
So it's been going on for quite some time. Besides this, do you have any issues with the Animal Welfare Act?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so the criminal investigation, I guess, never got off the ground. You never heard anything from it. And for the benefit of the listeners, the way that we came into contact was through some folks I interviewed about a year ago, John and Judy Dollarhide out in Nixa, Missouri. Their story was all over the internet. Not, of course, all over the mainstream media, because the mainstream media doesn't really do stories that help people for the most part.
Right.
The story was taken up by the alternative media, and they were being fined by the USDA, I think, for about $4 million. And they said the same thing, you know, here you pay by credit card, it's real easy, have a nice day. I remember now, speaking with those good folks out there in Missouri, that name was brought up back then, this Ara Conant or Conant, however you say it.
Yeah.
She's still involved, I guess, obviously,
because
you just talked to her. Yeah.
Yes, she is. And what was interesting, I had no idea who this woman was. When this happened to me, I got on the internet and just started doing USDA fines and just kind of Googling stuff and seeing what I could find out. And that case came up along with her name. Again, I didn't know who it was. It was actually John that said, is it Sarah Conant? And I said, boy. I said, her name's Sarah, but I didn't know her last name. But then, I later found out it was her last name. She was the same person that wouldn't give me any mercy whatsoever about the $22,000 fine. I don't know if this is fact or not, but from what I understand, after that whole dilemma there with the rabbits, she was supposed to be removed from that position, but she is obviously still in it.
Her background, she has a BA in animal behavior and philosophy.
Yes.
From Bucknell University, and she's from Virginia, and is a former Humane Society of the United States litigation attorney who was hired by the USDA to fill a position of chief of the investigative and enforcement branch of APHIS in August of 2010. So that's still what she is, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. This is wrong here because it said that she had been transferred to an undisclosed and different position within USDA. So she still is the chief of the investigative and enforcement branch of APHIS.
Yes.
Some folks could make the jump that somebody like this, who was litigation attorney for the Humane Society, could be somewhat of an aggressive person.
Absolutely. And, you know, I will say this. I spoke to her twice over the telephone, and she is very sincere. She is sweet. She doesn't have a better-than-you attitude, condescending, none of that, but merciless. Absolutely merciless. So she has her own agenda, and the USDA right now is carrying it out. I'd like to read something from the Animal Welfare Act, right from the act itself, the very first definition. It says, to ensure that animals intended for use in research facilities or for exhibition purposes or for use as pets are provided humane care and treatment. That is very simple, very black and white. But why would they write me up for not having a cover on a fluorescent light? What does that have anything to do with humane care or treatment of an animal? Or a cobweb up in the corner of a wall or fecal matter on the floor? If you raise thousands and thousands of animals, of course you're going to find that stuff. I've been raising the same colony of hamsters for 12 years, so there is obviously not a problem with contaminating diseases. They are functioning great. They produce well, so they're obviously healthy. That's what the agents would really be looking at. Are they fed? Are they watered? Or are they starved to death? Are the temperatures outrageous in the buildings that doesn't allow them to survive or reproduce? And none of that is the case. But they have all these regulations. It's just unbelievable. And what was interesting, when my inspectors were here last week, I asked the guy, I said, you know, we got like 6,000 animals in here. I said, what is an acceptable level of mortality in the boxes? Zero. Zero is acceptable level mortality in the boxes. Now, how can that possibly be the case when the animals only live a couple years? You've got thousands of them in there. Common sense would tell you you're always going to have dead in there. Always. Again, they're the lowest mammal life forms, rodents. They will eat each other. If the babies aren't healthy, they will kill a baby and eat it. And it doesn't make them sick. They don't have the same need for cleanliness or hygiene that human beings have. They're a rodent. Check out the rats in New York City and how they live. They live in squander, for Pete's sake, very healthily.
Well, that's actually what I was going to ask you, because you mentioned earlier that they lead a brutal existence, and I was going to ask you to expound upon that.
According to the regulations, like what we call a Syrian hamster, it's the bigger hamsters you'll see in the pet stores. They're all different colors. They're short hair or long hair. Those are the Syrian hamsters. By their regulations, the only time you can have two of them together is during breeding time, which is 1 week. That's it. So you pull them apart. There's one female to a box, and then she ends up having her babies, and that's the regulations. But they also have regulations for what's called a Russian dwarf hamster. It's a real small hamster. They're more social. We have the ability to do three females and a male. Well, mathematically speaking, then, if you have 100 boxes of 3-to-1s or 100 boxes of one female in, which boxes do you think are going to have more issues?
Common sense.
Yeah, and according to the regulations, I can do that. But when they go through and they look at those boxes that are group bred and the floor space is covered, you know, we have enough floor space completely due to the regulations, completely abiding by it, they will find more problems because there's more animals. But they don't give any consideration to that fact. None whatsoever. If there's a dead one in there and a dead one again in 6 months, $10,000 they can fine you. It is absolutely crazy. The fine changed back in 2008. It used to be a maximum of $2,500, which was still high.
Sure.
For some reason, Congress in that year changed it and upped it to $10,000.
For some reason.
Yeah, and you know what? These people, they don't have a clue as the value of a dollar. They can't. I mean, a $10,000 fine to a small business is immense.
Yeah, they don't, because many of them are multimillionaires.
Absolutely. The two inspectors that were just here Thursday, the one was a veterinarian. As a vet, had no history or knowledge of hamsters. None. Never inspected a hamster building in her life before last week. The gentleman that was there had no hamster facilities that he regularly inspected, but used to years ago. And what's kind of interesting, the gentleman that he used to inspect is closed out of business. The government closed them up several years ago because of that was kind of a big to-do. It was an LCM problem, a disease that somebody got from hamsters back then. So regularly, he had absolutely no history any longer of doing a hamster facility.
And he's got the kiss of death, too, on
yeah,
top of it.
Absolutely, the kiss of death. Both of them had the kiss of death. They'd have the camera out, taking pictures of everything.
Well, they're training. Working for the government.
Yes. And, you know, you work really, really hard to make sure your facility functions as efficiently and as profitably as possible. And the biggest way you do that is to make sure the animals are tended to. That's your first priority. And when you have these guys come in and you have all the experience that I have with literally raising millions of animals, and you have these people coming in and they just make you feel like dirt.
Yeah.
They make you feel as though you don't have a clue as to what you're doing. And at the same time, you're feeling bad because these guys are federal and, you know, big to do and all this power. And not either one of them have ever done the business that I do. Neither one of them has a clue how to run that kind of a business.
It's a shame that
they
take
absolutely.
It to this level. Now, I know that John and Judy had contacted their political representative.
Yes.
Have you done anything like that?
Yes, we have started that ball rolling. We faxed some information to our representative today. They are supposedly talking to their office in Washington, D.C. I'm going to take that route and see what we can come up with that. The USDA right now, their APHIS division, is costing the taxpayers $837 million. My regular inspector lives 15 miles from me. Okay, he's the guy that has always inspected me for years. These inspectors now drove 4.5 hours. 4.5 hours from Youngstown, Ohio, to come and check me out. Two of them. Imagine how much money that costs the taxpayers to have those guys do that, with a hotel bill on top of that. It's crazy. Why is a taxpayer paying these guys to come and look at hamsters? We got people foreclosing on their homes. You know how much $3,000 would have helped those guys out if their home foreclosed on?
Hallelujah there. More people should be looking at it in those terms. You're absolutely
yes.
right. So they came all the way from Youngstown, Ohio,
yes.
4.5 hours.
And I actually asked the inspector. The one was a veterinarian. The inspector told me he made $52,000 a year. Now, I didn't ask the vet, but I'm sure she's probably $20,000 above that. But that doesn't include all their benefits. That $52,000 a year salary on this individual is probably costing the taxpayer $75,000, and to pay him all this time to run all the way out to me and then all the way back. And actually, coincidentally, he also drove in this very week again and is visiting somebody in Harrisburg, another 4.5 hours back and forth at taxpayer's expense. It is just crazy. My business right now is kind of up in the air. I got two full-timers that I just don't know what to do. I've been doing this for so long, and people depend on me. They depend not only on me for their salaries, and I got customers that depend on the animals. You know, it's all because of an inspector a couple years ago that must have been a PETA member or something and was just crazy, and I stood my ground, as anybody should, and they didn't like that, and now I'm in their focus. And
all because of a couple of dead animals.
Yes.
There is nothing else.
What I asked Sarah Conant was, all of a sudden, after all these years, why did I get a huge fine? And she said to me, one of their big problems that they have with me is lack of veterinary care. By their regulations, it is mandatory for me to have a veterinarian come through my facilities once a year, which we do. We have proof. They don't deny that proof. However, this is what happens. With the Syrian hamster, they are a weaker animal. Why, I don't know, but they get a bacterial infection that is called wet tail. It's basically diarrhea. It's very common. A lot of times stress-related, weather-related, whatever the situation is. But we know what it is. Everybody knows what it is. We give them tetracycline and treat them. Well, what happens is, depending on when your inspector comes, wet tail is very prevalent in the spring and the fall when the weather is changing. It doesn't matter your temperature in the building. Somehow or other, they sense it. I don't know how they do it. 30% of them make it through it, and 70% don't. But we try. We have an area. It's called sick bay. It's tagged. It's marked. So those inspectors will go right there and look. And what do you think you're going to find in sick bay? You're going to find sick hamsters, and you might find dead hamsters. And they write me up on that. Now, what's funny is my veterinarian that I use wrote up a procedure for me to follow when they have wet tail. The procedure came from me. I had to tell my vet how we do it, and then by the regulations, the vet had to tell me how to do it. It's really silly. And that's what we did, and we've had that procedure since 2009, but that doesn't matter. It's kind of like taking your child with a runny nose to the hospital. You give them medicine and you treat them. Wet tail and hamsters is the same way. It's not a contagious disease that's going to affect the whole colony. Human beings don't get it. Everybody in the industry knows it. And unfortunately, what some growers do is when they get that wet tail in their colony, or they get a couple hamsters with it, they euthanize them immediately because they know when they are infected, they're going to get written up for it. So they kill them. And that's what I said to Sarah Conant, this animal welfare person. I said, because of your regulations, people are killing hamsters that they don't need to die. We treat them, 30 or 40% make it through it, and good for us. But I said, your inspectors come and write me up because they're sick hamsters. It doesn't even make sense.
Well, it makes sense in government speak.
Yeah, another silly example. I am supposed to have pest control. That means I need, like, sticky pads or poison on the floor to keep control of the animals running around. So we do that. Well, what do you have when you have poison on the floor and animals that eat the poison? You're going to have dead animals. That's a write-up. You will get written up for that. That's a $10,000 fine if it happens twice. It's crazy.
It's beyond crazy. The government's out of control. Somebody has to put a stop to them. Anybody with common sense listening to this would have to agree.
Yes. They can have these regulations if they want and conduct business as they always have in the past. They can write me up if they want, and I don't have a problem with that. But this fine and putting human beings out of work and out of business over pulling a dead animal out of a box is so unjustified. In the APHIS Investigative and Enforcement Services brochure that they very kindly gave to me, there is a comment in there I'd like to read. It says, officials with the EOB, Enforcement Investigative Part, review the investigative case files and determine fair and appropriate enforcement actions based on the documented evidence. Now, when I tell anybody that I talk to that I just got a $22,000 fine, everybody falls off their chair. My dad was here today. I told him. He's like, what? But when you talk to Sarah Conant, $22,000, oh, that's no big deal. They have no sense of justice whatsoever. None whatsoever. They're going to put people out of a job and me potentially out of my entire business if I have to face a $450,000 fine over this silliness. It's crazy. And I've been very conscious of this. Over the last couple years, USDA has actually put hamster breeders out of business. The peak hamster demand is in the wintertime when all the kids are in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of want something to do. So that's peak hamster demand. Last winter was horrific. Demand was sky high and production was very, very low because USDA put, I think, two or three hamster growers out of business. And I knew who they were. You know, I didn't know them personally or ever spoke to them. It's a small community. And I was kind of wondering how they did that or whatever happened, but I know exactly how it happened now. This is my livelihood. If it weren't your livelihood, you would probably just close up and be done with it and give up the fight, not even risk the fight. But unfortunately for me, I'm in a position where I got a family of six, and I'm going to put up a fight.
The American way, not just a family
yeah.
of six, but you've got a bigger family because you have 9 employees, really, who
yeah.
depend on you, because with the truckers included, and their families, too.
Yes.
These people should be ashamed of themselves, what they're doing.
Yes.
What they're doing yeah. to regular, hardworking people. Instead
yeah.
of helping the regular, hardworking, tax-paying people, they're hurting them.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The animal rights activists are moving forward their own agenda at our expense.
For the benefit of the listeners, I want to just give them a couple of websites. Well, your website is sandvalleyfarms.com. Of course, that's all lowercase, no spaces. Also, you just started up a Facebook page, right?
Yes, Sand Valley Farms.
Sand Valley Farms, Inc., period.
Yes.
If folks are interested in supporting you, what could they do?
Well, right now, I think a big thing that they could do is call the USDA and speak to them and give them their opinion on this craziness. Whether that actually helps me or not, I don't know. But the only people that think this is reasonable is them. That's it. The USDA agents, the USDA investigative officers, those are the only people that think that this is reasonable. So they have to come to understand that this is completely unjustified. Completely. I read that in their own pamphlet. It's supposed to be fair. Where's the fairness in this? I got to fight to keep a 21-year business afloat because of them. It would be a completely different thing if the agents came here and saw animals starving to death. You know, that would be a whole different subject.
Like you see on Animal Cop.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Don't get me wrong, we don't take people through the building, but if you, Dave, would want to say, hey, Dean, to get an idea of what this is, I would love for you, so you get firsthand impression on coming and looking at the building and seeing what the agents see and give your own opinion of it. If you listen to the USDA, it's like, I'm the worst offender ever. I mean, a $22,000 fine, holy smokes, you got to be really, really, really bad to get a fine like that. I would love for people to see it firsthand and see what it looks like.
When you distill it all down, the U.S. government wants to destroy your lives.
Yes.
That's what it is. You could say, well, you know what? The U.S. government wants to protect these animals from you. The U.S. government wants to make sure that these animals are protected. Ultimately, what they want to do with this is they want to destroy your lives.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
There is no other way to look at it, because if they are allowed to do what they want to do, it will destroy your lives. 21
yes.
years, I can guarantee you that none of these people in government have ever started their own business. That's why they're
that's
in government.
Right. And that's what angers me so much, because the agents that were there, they look at the regulations and they say, say, I don't like this. This lid, according to my opinion, needs to be changed. In fact, not this lid. We're going to make you change 1,000 of these lids because we don't like the looks of them. That's $25 a lid. What are they thinking? I got to be very conscious of how much money goes out of the business. I can't run my business like the federal government runs theirs. And if I have to run my business that way, then I need tax money.
Yeah, you need subsidies. Dean Moyer, the president of Sand Valley Farms out in Richfield, Pennsylvania. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners, and I hope that it unfolds in a favorable way for you, your family, and the employees, and looking forward to getting an update and hearing the good news, hopefully.
Thanks.